Thank you for participating in that. And a few more things I wanted to share. Does anybody want to say anything about that whole experience, about listening, about sharing, about pain terrain from that? Feel free, now is the time to make a comment or two or a question. Yes, Larry.
I felt like I was on the edge of falling into a freeze response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult for me to go investigate that with kindness, to allow the expert myself to be at
right.
this edge. Part of me wanted to fall apart. Part of me wanted to close up. Just to continue with it and breathe with it. And I'm recognizing what was going on. I could see what was going
right.
on. You know, I just wish I had more skill with you know.
Well, let me just
being at this edge.
So, what you just shared is a lot of skills. Number one, you have awareness. That's great. Meaning, you notice the edge when it comes. So why that's important, because awareness is what brings us to choice, that we have a choice. We can stay there, or we can, if you see the window of tolerance, we can choose to find a way to get back to our comfort zone. Sometimes dissociating makes sense. I didn't want to sit next to that guy on the railroad. Dissociating was really a smart thing to do, so I got up and left. So if you're unable to be present with an experience and you have awareness that that's what's happening, the goal isn't to force yourself to go through that. The goal is to know what the edge is. And at that moment, I can't be here. This is too hard for me. So don't make the choice to have a different action in terms of what your options are. It's having the choice. That's what he said, what Gavin had. Having choices is the liberating experience, not having to make something happen or not. Do you understand what I'm saying there? That's the key. And that choice is coming out of your awareness. So I want to validate that you could share with us that you're aware of those edges is a skill.
I didn't know what other choice I had except just to sit at the edge and tolerate it.
Well,
while doing
the
this.
Choice is to sit at the edge and tolerate it if you can, or the choice is to get up and go to the bathroom, or the choice is to distract yourself, or the choice is to practice compassion. The choice is to know that you have a choice and to begin to exercise that muscle. That's the whole point, for you to feel empowered that no matter where you are, you can choose. This is the quote from Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And he had a quote about choice. He said, "Everything can be taken from a person but one thing. The last of human freedoms, the right to choose one's own way in any given set of circumstances." So, as I shared too, with the you have a choice. You want to participate, you don't want to participate. And I want to help you listen to the voice in you that you trust is making the wisest decision. So that's the point. And it's not to judge yourself or beat yourself up. You were hanging out at the edge.
I didn't choose to do those other things because I felt like that would have been me choosing to go in the direction of deep depression tonight.
Great.
And so I wanted to hang in there.
Yeah, so you did. You got to trust that. And it doesn't mean it's easy. Hanging out at the edge is not easy. It's not, "Oh, I'm hanging at the edge. Whoopee-doo." No, I'm hanging at the edge, and it's really hard, and it's scary, and it's painful, and I want to get out of here, but I'm okay.
That's that's the part that is tricky.
That's a process. Be gentle. Yeah. Compassion.
Thank you.
What I'm emphasizing is be careful and be aware, because sometimes we have a habit of always, you know, telling ourselves we can't do it. Like that's another part of the habit. I had a patient that came in, and I want to share something. You know Bob Newhart? Well, he has a funny thing on the line, and he's got a 5-minute thing where somebody comes to him for 5-minute therapy. And go online and watch it from what I'm sharing now. It's called Stop It. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. You know what I'm talking about? It's funny, right? So this person comes to him and she's all excited because she's got all of this stuff. And her issue is she's afraid of being buried alive in a box. And so she's seeing him and he says, I only charge $5 and I don't take change. And after three minutes, he was finished. But she didn't like it, so they went on. But here's what he shared with her. She says, I'm giving you the punchline really quickly. You'll watch it. And she says, he says, well, did anybody ever try to bury you alive in a box? He said, no. But she has all of these fears and phobias about it. So he said, I want you to listen very carefully now. I'm going to say two words. And she said, should I write it down? I said, no, most people can remember it. Two words. And, you know, that's what I want you to take home with you and practice. And she says, okay. And he says, you ready? He goes, stop it. Stop it. Larry, stop it. And she says, stop it? He goes, yeah, stop it. Don't do it anymore. Stop being afraid of, well, I can't stop. I'm doing it, I can't stop. And so she went through that whole thing, and then they were finished, and he was going to pay her, and she said she only had a $5 bill. So she says, okay, well, I'll take two more minutes. So then he said, well, what else do you have going on for you? And she says, well, I have food addictions, and I have this, and she listed about 20 other phobias and things of that nature. And he was listening. He goes, okay, now I really want you to listen carefully, Margaret. I forget what her name was, because I'm going to say a full sentence now, and this is, you need to take this home and listen to it. He says, and she says, what? And he goes, stop it or I'll bury you alive in a box. Anyway, Bob Newhart does it a lot better. But that's just to see the habitual patterns that we're in where we beat the, you know, I gave a lecture 1 year ago because I do a lot of speaking. And it doesn't matter whether it's 500 people or 10 people. It doesn't matter. There's a part of me, I gave a talk once. I think it was about 200 people in the audience. Everybody was enjoying it. I know I was doing a good job. One person got up and walked out. And part of me said, uh-oh, what did I say? Why didn't they like me? I made a mistake. I should have said that. And I was like watching it as like the most ridiculous thing in the world. But that's where part of us goes. If you know Rick Hansen, it's called a negativity bias, where we naturally have the habit to say we're not doing it and not. So you've shared a lot of positive awarenesses, Larry, about what you're aware of and then finished it up with how it's not good enough and you're not... You were hanging out at the edge. That's what it is, being aware. And you didn't fall apart. You didn't fall in the hole, and you were able to talk about it, and you had awareness of it. So I'm trying to validate that's what it is. It's not like, oh, I hang out at the edge, and I got cured. I could hang out at the edge, and it was scary, and it was hard, and I was able to stay on the roller coaster, and I didn't jump off. I didn't get off. I could hang out there. That's the window of tolerance. To be aware of when you're pushing it away and when you're getting lost in it. And at that moment, bring a little mindfulness or a little compassion or a little grounding yourself so that you don't fall into either of those two, hyper or hypo-arousal. So you can be calm in the storm. That's a saying I have on my email. You know, you have an email and you have a quote. One of my main quotes is, serenity is not freedom from the storm. It's peace amidst the storm. So it's not that the storm goes away or the fear goes away or the anger goes away. It's that our relationship to it changes and we can be with it. That's what Cynthia shared. I can be with my anger in a different way because I'm not getting rid of it and I'm not judging it. I'm not blaming it and I'm not lost in it. It doesn't take over. It's just anger. And I can see it for what it is. That's the practice. And part of that is... takes time. It's not something that just happens like this. It's a life every day, every breath, every moment experience. That's what our practice is. It's not, you know, go on a retreat and it's 24/7. And it took me a long time to learn that because I go on retreat and then live my life instead of no. The point of I should be mindful in my life and forget about retreats. Retreats are easy. I remember I went, this was years ago, they used to have on the retreat 30 years ago, 1980, whatever, you'd meditate for like 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, and never talk to anybody, and there would be no introductions, you wouldn't communicate with each other, you would just meditate and do your own thing. And you might think that you got peaceful. And then they began having introductions where you should be able to speak. I've been silent for 3 weeks. So maybe it would be good to talk to somebody and see what's going on. And I'll never forget, it was interesting because I really, whatever it means to have a good retreat, I was with myself. I hung out at the edge. I felt calm and peaceful. I had a lot of awareness. I was, you know, practicing and the whole story. And I was feeling pretty good, relatively speaking. And then they asked us to get together in groups. There was 100 people at IMS, and they had about 20 people from New York. After 5 minutes, I wanted to go on retreat again because we had to decide which room we were going to go to, and I didn't like this person and that. So like, I practiced for 3 weeks compassion and wisdom and acceptance and presence, and 5 minutes with a group of 20 people from New York, and I was ready to go back on retreat for a month. What I'm getting at is our work is moment to moment, 24/7. Every moment is an opportunity for awakening. But we practice so that we can bring what I've been sharing to our life when our buttons get pushed. We can bring mindfulness. We can bring awareness. One of the other handouts that I have that I want to recommend you read, this is about resilience, about cultivating resilience, our ability to respond to the stresses and traumas because we have new choices. And that's all that happens in trauma. We don't have that. We only have survival. We only have do the best you can. We don't have learn some skills and some tools on how to deal with that in that way. And so we have to cultivate resilience. Did you want to say something? No, okay, you follow? So let me read to you Tenek Chodron, which is an important closing. And before I do that, a couple of things. I wrote a little book years ago, which I think is an excellent beginning book on meditation. You can get it for 99 cents on Amazon digitally. It's out of print. It's maybe getting printed again. About 25,000 copies got sold as a little gift book. And it's a nice little book, has all the teachings and meditations in it, but I'm emphasizing it because the title is Happiness Through Meditation. Because I talk about pain all the time and suffering all the time and facing it all the time. But I'm here to help you be happy. That's why we're here. We're here that through opening to the truth of our pain and suffering is how happiness comes. Like I shared with you, the most painful moment of my life was my father's death. Still is, still was. And yet it was the moment of most awakening and enlightenment that my heart had been open. Okay, I'll share with you one other story that'll help you appreciate where I'm coming from, aside from what I shared with you about my patients. My dad, I had a dream. After my father passed away, I had a recurring dream. So all of the issues from my childhood started coming to me in my consciousness through my dreams that I had repressed in most of my life. And so you'll appreciate the context of this dream because one aspect of my father's wounds I didn't tell you about, which I'm telling you now, was he had nervous breakdowns. And so he had to go to a mental hospital. And if you ever saw One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and they do shock treatments on people in those VA hospitals, that's what they did to my dad. So from the PTSD, they didn't know how to treat his brain. So what they did in those days, they fried the part of the brain that was causing the anxiety and the depression and the nightmares. And what that does to a person is there's not much of a person left. It takes away the affect. So I was 7 years old when that happened, and my father was taken away, and I was told he's away working, and when he came back, he was a different person. So I had a dad who was a wonderful man and a good man and a strong man and a courageous man, but he had a lot of anxiety and a lot of all of the pain and trauma from the war on the one hand, and on the other, the healing was shock treatments and then eventually dying having bypass surgery, which has become what my work is about, is helping people not bypass the truth of their pain, that's where the medicine is. So, you know, I wish he had doctors like me helping him learn to be with it, because what are we doing for trauma? We're doing yoga, we're doing mindfulness, we're doing sharing our truth with each other. We're facing it, we're being with it, we're healing it in that way. So the dream, the recurring dream I had, and this was before being a doctor or whatever, when I was, after he passed away, we had a little corridor in our three-room apartment in the South Bronx. And my father had the kind of paranoia where he didn't trust anybody, but he trusted the family. So what I understood from that later on was I felt responsible to take care of my dad, because nobody else was doing it. That's where codependency comes from, right? When you have a wounded parent or alcoholic parent or whatever. And so the dream was, I was holding my father in his arms, in my arms, and men in white coats were coming to take him away. And as they were, as he was being pulled out of my arms, this is after he passed away, I would have this dream, and it was like the apartment where we were in, he was saying, you know, don't let them take me. This is what I was hearing from my dad. And I was screaming to the men in the white coat, leave him alone, he only needs to feel his pain. So the little boy in me knew that my father was in pain, knew that he just needed somebody to let him feel his pain, like there was nothing wrong with him, if you get my point on that. Do you remember, and I related to this, it's a different situation, but remember that little girl whose father got taken away because he was an immigrant and she was crying outside of school? This just happened about a month ago. And she was weeping and she was a little girl and she says, don't take my father away, he's not a criminal. Remember that? You know, imagine, and just could relate to what she was going through, trying to protect and save her dad and all of that kind of stuff. So that's where my passion comes from, to want to help you be with the truth of your pain as medicine. And I've learned over the course of my career more and more and more and more, not just from my experience with patients and my own life, but scientifically, epigenetically, neuroplasticity, psychoneuroimmunology, that's where the medicine is, in your own consciousness, in your own brain, in your own awareness, in your own ability to be empowered to heal yourself. And so let me read from Pema Chodron. Okay? And she writes, we awaken this bodhicitta, this tenderness for life, when we can no longer shield ourselves from the vulnerability of our condition, from the basic fragility of existence. You take it all in, you let the pain of the world touch your heart, and you turn it into compassion. Who is he here who asked about what do we do? I think the gentleman here asked, how do I apply this to what's going on in our country now? Remember that question? He's not here. He left? Okay. So this is what I was going to read to him. You take it all in, you let the pain of the world touch your heart, and you turn it into compassion. It is said that in difficult times, it is only bodhicitta that heals. When inspiration has become hidden, when we feel ready to give up, this is the time when healing can be found in the tenderness of pain itself. This is the time to touch the genuine heart of bodhicitta. In the midst of loneliness, in the midst of fear, in the middle of feeling misunderstood and rejected, is the heartbeat of all things, the genuine heart of sadness. Just as a jewel that has been buried in the earth for a million years is not discolored or harmed, in the same way, this noble heart is not affected by all of our kicking and screaming. The jewel can be brought out into the light at any time, and it will glow as brilliantly as if nothing had ever happened. No matter how committed we are to unkindness, selfishness, or greed, the genuine heart of bodhicitta cannot be lost. It is here in all that lives, never marred and completely whole. We think that by protecting ourselves from suffering, we are being kind to ourselves. The truth is, we only become more fearful, more hardened, and more alienated. That's the suffering that leads to more suffering. We experience ourselves as being separate from the whole. This separateness becomes like a prison for us, a prison that restricts us to our personal hopes and fears, and to caring only for the people nearest to us. Curiously enough, if we primarily try to shield ourselves from discomfort, we suffer. Yet when we don't close off and we let our hearts break, we discover our kinship with all beings. So that's what happens when we open to the truth of our pain. Whether it was the gift of my father's death and his suffering that opened me to face my pain from childhood and a life of exploring and guiding other people to open to it and learning skills and tools and ways of being and understanding that in our symptoms, in our anxiety, in our pain, in our illness, whatever the diagnosis is also most likely a part of us that's scared and helpless and needs love. And if we listen and connect with ourselves, we'll find it. And if we welcome it because we have the heart of compassion, that's our healing. That's the medicine. That's what I was hoping to share with you today, to empower yourself to trust your own wisdom, your own bodhicitta, your own Buddha nature. Yes.
Fragile and terrified and vulnerable. And I was hoping that you could speak a little bit about resiliency, because of the way I feel at my core, I'm devastated by even the most minor of offenses. And it creates blocks in my interpersonal relationships that are troubling to me.
So what answer do you think I'm going to give you? I'm going to suggest that when we practice mindfulness and compassion, we cultivate ways of being that enhance our resiliency, our ability to face that vulnerability, that fragility, to the degree that we welcome it, we allow it, we give it space. We don't have to be afraid of it like Pema Chodron is saying, but we don't have to let it come and take over. Compassion, clarity, a confidence. So I'm practicing almost 40 years now. And I ask people, how have I helped you? How did I help the woman who wrote that poem? How do I help the woman who was fat and ugly and I hate myself? And she wrote a poem too that I'm going to read in closing. And the answer I get isn't the herb I gave them, if I gave them an herb, isn't the meditation I taught them, or it very much is a resiliency born out of their own confidence and competence, their own faith that they could live in that window of tolerance, that no matter what they faced, they could learn to be with it, they could choose to face it, that they had the courage, the compassion, the clarity, the competence, the confidence, the connection with themselves, the fearlessness to live their life opening to that. So in the same way you were able to see a shift in how you looked at the anger, just be open to, can I see, how can I be with what you just shared, instead of what's the answer so I get here, how can I be there? And that may shift it that, oh, here's another gift for me. That place that's fragile, that I've been trying to, I'm still, it pushes my button. Welcome it. Embrace it. Embody it with your wisdom, with your compassion. And that's what patients have taught me, is what Pema Chodron says, what Gavin Harrison says, is if we allow ourselves to cultivate that part of our being that our meditation practice enhances, it gives us all the answers. So the young lady, I think she left, had a lot of courage to come with her struggles and her traumas and her kids. I spoke with her afterwards a little bit, but she's doing fantastic. It's not easy. We don't have an answer in that regard, but it takes a lot of courage to look at that. And, you know, the best thing she can do for her kids, we can all do, is be on a journey of healing and recovery for ourselves wherever we are on that journey. And so we can be on that path and still be there. So I would just suggest, even in how you asked it, you know, how can I be with that in with wisdom and compassion? And not that, not to judge your comment that you asked it improperly, but just to see that that same shift that happened with your anger could happen with how you're holding that. And that's just another, that's just a long habit of conditioning that you have. And so if I could show you this for a second. I wanted to show you. So whoever has to clean this, my apologies, my compassion. Okay, great. Yeah, we need something to do that. So I want to share this with you because it's important. This circle, and how I see it, represents like repetition compulsion. All the patterns that we get caught in, that we struggle with. Just go around. We push it away, we get stuck in it, we push it away, it's still there. And, you know, we want to get out, we try to get out, but somehow we're still playing the same game. So I like to think of this as a bridge. We have to break this pattern. A line that I have speak of is, meditation is a neurotic deconditioner of your patterns because we have awareness of it. So these are your neurotic patterns that cause our pain, cause our suffering. And these are patterns of survival. It's not bad, it's not wrong, you're not stupid. This is how I got through my childhood. To be how difficult I was, or whatever I struggled with. But after childhood, it wasn't very satisfying. It didn't allow me to be as happy and healthy as I'd like to be. And so this is a bridge. For me, the bridge was yoga. For me, the bridge was mindfulness and compassion. That I could start to naturally break these patterns and bring to all of that struggle and all of that suffering another choice of wisdom, of compassion, of embodiment with yoga and awareness. And not to fix and cure myself, but to be with myself in a different way. And this stuff started to shift a little bit, and I could start having a new pattern. And instead of reinforcing a negative pattern of I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not deserving enough, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, I'm worthless, I started feeling, oh, I'm empowered, and I'm deserving, and it's possible. It's a different consciousness. And I brought that energy to this, and what this represents is seeing with new eyes. See that? So, what I taught you is there's a bridge from here. We've all been stuck here. We don't need to be there anymore. And we can have compassion. It's just a habit. It's all conditioning. That's all it is. And your brain can change. It changes with love, with compassion, with resilience, with that power. So, let me just read one more thing to you. And then we're going to stop, okay? And I'm going to send you an email of some people wanted the 3 a.m. poem, and I'll send you some other stuff. But really what mindfulness is, skillful means, is resilience, is learning new skills, new choices, new ways of being that can respond in ways that, beyond the survival strategies that kept us alive during our childhood or during the trauma, but then didn't work anymore. Your anger has outlived its usefulness. And you finally see that. And so you can let it go. Not like, you know, you just, goodbye, I don't need you anymore, thank you very much. But if you need to be angry, you know how to do it. And there are times to be angry, and it'll be useful. But not as a habit to keep going. So this is the woman who was fat and ugly and hated, she hated herself. So this was her one of her poems. The world around me provides all that I need if I will seek it. Beauty abounds where my eye can see if I will look. Love surrounds me wherever I go if I will open my heart to receive it. So she had a lot of courage to face her wounds in ways that taught me to sit here and help face mine as a wounded healer and to hopefully guide you to have the courage to open to yours. And that's really the medicine. So, final compassion. Close the eyes for 1 second. Please, if you'd like, I invite you to do that. And I just want you to reflect on the day and choose one experience, one insight, one thought, one quote, just something that you experienced here today that you found helpful, that you found useful, that was an insight from yourself, from others, from me, that you can take with you to bring into your daily life moment to moment. Just allow yourself, maybe there was more than one, but I just want you to pick one that helps move you on the bridge to happiness, to peace of mind, to healing. And you're not perfect, and you don't have to be perfect to love and accept yourself just the way you are. Doesn't mean you can't continue to make efforts in healing and awakening. So just spend a moment reflecting on that. And just imagine yourself actually practicing it. Something today that touched you, that felt meaningful, that felt wise, that felt worthwhile to bring with you, to take with you, to let grow, to plant the seed. And ending with compassion, we're all in it together. We're not alone. Our struggles and suffering is an opportunity to awaken part of our humanity. And it's a part of us that may be scared and helpless and needs love. So from the Dalai Lama, if you want to be happy, practice compassion. And if you want other people to be happy, practice compassion. And thank you for your presence, your courage, your willingness to hang out here and be with yourself and each other.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.